Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pony Development Sync for October 10th, 2023. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If those others on the call would like to say their names, now is a good time to associate a name to the voice for those listening along.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
Adrian Boyko.
Dipin Hora.
Right. So, let's take a look at the pull requests in the Pony C repo in our auto-generated agenda for today. We have pull request 4461 update install Docker. Assuming that's documentation for the GitHub container registry change. So this is some documentation about using GHCR rather than the sort of implicit Docker Hub registry that Docker CLI will try to connect to. I'm marking this as approved, unless anyone has any other thoughts, questions they want to share about that. Let's move on then to 4456, run Musl CI tests using LLDB. So we've updated our Alpine version to see if we could use LLDB instead of GDB. And yes, we can now without hanging. So this switches us to use LLDB instead. Sean mentioned he's leaving GDB in the container image for now, just in case we need it. I don't see any issues with this. I'm going to mark it as approved as well, unless anyone else has any other thoughts, questions they want to share. If not, then moving on to pull request 4036, make the verify check for the LLVM IR generation on by default. This is something that we tried to bring in a while back, but we had some failures on IR verification. The it looks like there is one issue remaining, at least in the Linux check that I did.
We don't run all of the tests. Like it'll end early, so there could be ones in tests that come later, but yes, for up through that point, there's only one.
So Sean, you said we wouldn't want both returns. So this is so the just for context with people listening along, the there's a failing test because there's an IR verification failure due to an extra terminator inside of a basic block. It's on a full program test that's testing the case of doing an early return inside of a with block, where that with block is going to do the dispose later. And Sean, you were saying the issue is we wouldn't want both returns if they end up together, but a return from a with is perfectly fine. The issue is that it is the last statement and our no explicit return except early doesn't cover this. Okay.
That's the tricky part. Is normally this would be caught by that, and it was much easier to implement with blocks as not being their own scope because they're not really a scope. It's just stacking some things to get it's here's this, and then maybe we have an else, et cetera. If in this particular instance, there's no else and there's no post thing to handle any error one, which is fine. So it's just a single block, and it puts it all together, right? If this was individual blocks for like if then I don't think we would have the issue, would we? Because we'd have a block for handling, would we have a block for handling the if and the else, or would it somehow merge that down to just a single basic block? It wouldn't, right? That rambling makes sense.
I want to make sure Something I'm confused by right now is, so I think what you're saying is a reasonable question to ask, or like, but like, I have like a somewhat different question, okay. Which is, so you were saying you think that this is only for the case of you think this is only relevant for the case of if return is the last statement inside the with block.
If it's the last statement inside the return with block, and the with block is I put that wrong. If the with block that has the return in it is the last thing before the end, right? Mm-hmm. Then, and we don't have an else and we don't have a post like this one, then this is effectively an early return. And we would we don't allow you to do early returns at this is not an early return. It is actually the return at the end. And we do have logic to catch that in the simplest case and never get to this being a thing where we'd have return. Right?
Yeah. And yeah, if I try to like add another statement, I'm playing with it now in the Pony Playground. If I try to add another statement like after the return, it thinks that I'm trying to use that as the return value, and it says I can't return a value in a constructor or behavior. That threw me off for a second.
Really?
We don't allow anything to happen after a return, I think, lexically.
In a constructor? Oh, yeah.
At all is what I mean. Like lexically, even though it's on a separate line, lexically it thinks that I'm trying to return the result of the next expression as a value.
Oh yes, because
it's nonsensical to have code after a return.
Right.
And so the parser is confused about like what I'm trying to accomplish through that. So
first of all, this case that I came up with to make sure it passed might be nonsensical and we might not want to allow this. Yes?
Yeah. It's... So weird is if I try to add something after that, if I try to add a line after that, I think I get a compiler crash, which is interesting. So if you add on the last line of that example program, if you add let x equals foo, like a string foo, or any other thing I've tried putting there, I get a compiler crash of some kind, which is interesting.
So I'm going to take our
Sorry, did I lose audio or did you stop talking?
I stopped talking. Sorry, okay. I'm creating an issue for this so that we can actually discuss it on the issue, because I think that the definition that the test that I put together for the with disposable block when I did it and we agreed on them as good were actually wrong, and we need to, what we should do with this is figure out what happens with return in relation to disposable blocks, come up with those, and then we can make sure that those tests pass. And then worry about the, you know, and then we shouldn't have the LLVMIR issue, right? I think this is pointing to all right, the validation stuff for disposable block and return doesn't actually make sense.
Yeah, it's probably also responsible for the compiler crash, because I guess, yeah, like the compiler crash is also nonsensical, right? Because I'm doing something after I definitely return. Like there's no way that that's like, it's like an unreachable block basically that I added, and it's doing weird stuff. So it makes sense, I think. Yeah, I think the next, I think probably it would be fair to say that like return. What I haven't tried is if
I created 4464. Can you post your other nonsensical thing onto 4464 as an example?
Yes. Okay, yeah. So an if block inside or outside the with block makes things okay. All right, yeah. Let me share this.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, so I'm adding a comment. This example program creates a compiler crash.
Okay, I'm back.
Yeah, I'm just going to add another thought that I have, like, so if the with is in a conditional block like if, then this is a valid, then this having a return inside the with, it should be a valid thing to do. Without the conditional, it is nonsensical. So for the purposes of getting that pull request across the finish line, or at least advancing it to the next step, is it fair to say that the full program test for return inside with is testing the right semantics? Like, if we just add an if true, then, and like that it surrounds the with block, so that we're still like, this full program test is still testing that the exit code disposal works properly, right? Like the dispose gets called, which sets the exit code and like proves that the dispose system is working. If we surround it with if true, then this is like not something that is nonsensical, and or rather, yeah, it will pass the verification check. I believe it should. Let me confirm that. I believe that should pass the verification check, and it should allow us to proceed with enabling verification while we follow up asynchronously to add this. Oh no,
or
it doesn't.
Or we remove the test.
Sorry, compilation failed. Yeah. Or we remove the test. Right. We could add a test back when we complete the other issue ticket.
Probably multiple tests.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I'm going to say that we're going to remove it and point to 4464.
Yeah, I've confirmed that the IR doesn't have the same double return problem if I surround it with an if block, because the two returns get separated by the if.
Yep.
Basic blocks in the LLVM IR.
And on 4464, I put the note that with doesn't create a scope right now, which may or may not be correct, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Not sure all that implies.
I don't remember why we
implies.
I don't remember why we decided to do it that way, But so, for example, I believe like if I defined, you know, a variable inside the width, then, oh, that's why we did it. Yeah. Okay. That's a deeper discussion. We can have that another time.
Yeah, it sounds like there are several things that are coupled together here. When you say it's a scope, it implies something about variable scoping, but yep. It also implies something about how we handle returns and like basic blocks.
Well, yes, because a scope is it would drop that into a block, I believe. We have to look into that. Yeah, we have to revisit that.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on, let's take a look at issue ticket 4463. I took a brief look at this before the sync call, and I agree that it's a bug. So this is titled Name Clashes in Object Literals? Question mark. So to avoid getting a little bit, you know, too in depth of trying to describe like what's going on in the example, there's an object literal that uses type parameters. And if it uses a type parameter that has the same name as a type parameter of a function that it's getting copied into when the object literal gets expanded, then that causes some kind of clash with the name resolution of the type parameter name getting confused by the name in the context that's calling the object literal.
Let me verify that, because you're making an assumption which I'm not positive is the case. So cool. Let me try one thing, okay?
And actually, you know what? I'm noticing it's not true that the object literal is getting expanded. So there's something I said that is definitely not true. By looking at this closer, the object literal is not getting expanded into the function with the into parameter. Okay.
So the problem actually is a clash between that, I believe, between that into parameter and the traits into method name. Because changing the, well, actually, no, sorry, that is incorrect. You're right. It is clashing with the parameter. You're right. I just misinterpreted. I completely got things backwards. If in trait foo, I change that into for, you know, on ref into another name, then it's all fine as well. So
yeah. The function name or the type parameter name?
The type parameter name.
Yeah.
It's all fine. Yeah.
So what's weird though is that the object literal should just be getting expanded into fun apply of primitive converter.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be getting expanded into the scope of fun ref into of trait foo.
But it is picking up the into somehow, yeah. But how is it picking up the into?
It picks it up from it's picking it up from is foo on line 13. Object yes. Is foo.
Yes, it is foo. So it gets that trait, but then what is it seeing, which is funky there, right?
Well, the trait makes us copy the method into the object that's created the object literal, and the object literal already has a type parameter with that name.
Yep, that is the case. There, I don't think there's anything to fix here. Other than saying we could change how traits copy things in, right? There's at this point in time, unless we want to completely revisit that, which I don't think we want to, we should review the documentation for how traits work to say that traits can result in name clashes.
Because
they can.
Yeah, it's super unfortunate. But yeah, I think the only way to fix this would be to rewrite during during trait copying to rewrite type parameters and to rewrite function type parameters to be like hygienic.
Yep. You want to leave that as a note while I'm changing the title of this?
Yeah.
I'm not going to call this a bug. I'm going to change this to enhancement. All right? Because it is a potentially for people a surprising result, but
Surprising
it's
limitation, yeah.
surprising limitation, but it's not a bug.
Okay. Comment has been left. Glad we worked through understanding what's going on with that one. Let's take a look at 4459. Sean, do you want to talk us through this one?
Hold on.
Non-sendable data seen as sendable.
All right, which number is that?
4459.
4459. Okay. Oh yes, this is so when we fixed the box. So there was a case, and this was I fixed it the at tail end of last week where the logic for whether something was sendable or not was incorrect, which allowed you to recover a vowel from a box, which turned out to actually exist in the PEG parser and in the changelog tool projects from code that Pony people wrote as a bug. And in the process of closing that bug, we're talking it through with Sylvan. Jason pointed out a way for code that previously wouldn't pass the sendable test that now will, but still ends up getting caught up in a later issue where this is a more esoteric one, and far less likely to happen than the other, which was a quite likely to happen where this needs to be investigated and is probably a deeper change to how we're determining sendability, particularly in relation to generics. Does that make sense? So I think we can take the discuss during sync off, and this definitely needs investigation and figuring out from someone.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a look at 4457. Backend null in epoll during CI run. Has log output. Note that it's running code from signals slash signal handler that leads to an ASIO event create. That would mean we're creating a signal handler. But as far as I can see, there's nothing in our test that does that. Kind of confused. Says the comment. This is happening at or near shutdown of the program.
Yep.
Does that mean when you say we're running code from signal/signal handler, does that mean that we're running a test of signal handler?
Look at the stack trace.
Okay.
In the frame thread 4.
Yeah.
Right. It's actually running signal handler dispatch, which does a ACO create and ACO subscribe, but the back end doesn't exist at that point.
And this is within the full library, the full standard library test, it looks like, right? Standard loop release.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, as far as I can see, there's nothing in our tests that creates a signal handler. That would be
so we received a SIG child, right? So SIG child though, could in theory be coming from, this could be coming from process tests, maybe, actually. Right, because when a process exits, does the parent process actually get sent SIG child? I have yet to figure out whether that's actually the case or not.
I don't know.
This is unclear to me.
But looking at our tests, the only things that create a signal handler are, we have a test signal int, which is a unit test.
Yep.
And we have... let's see, ANSI term creates, if you create an ANSI term, it creates a signal handler as well.
So let's say for a moment that SIG child is actually being sent because of process tests, and after the process tests have ended, somehow the actual process, one of the child processes that was started sent this. I still don't understand where the signal handler is coming from, right? I'm just confused at this
moment. We do run a test that creates a signal handler for int, but not child. I'm not sure how we filter signals in the signal handler.
But like in the test, do we tear down the signal handler? Or does it continue to run?
We only dispose it after timed out.
Oh, okay. Handler could be coming from a successful signal test run where we didn't dispose of the handler after the test completed successfully.
Yeah. I'll add just a bit more context once you post that. Did you post it already?
I will in a moment. All right. Okay. And I'm going to change this from needs investigation to a good first issue, because I think the thing right now is to make that change. Close the issues and see if this happens again, right? Because this is a timing thing, etc. And in all likelihood, if we're leaving a signal handler open, then that could result in this happening if we got like a SIG child from a late arriving child process from the process test dying while we're actually shutting down the EPOL stuff.
What's not clear to me is like, should we actually be like, do we have if it were a Sig child, what is the mechanism within EPOL that filters for which signals we're listening for? And does it actually make sense that a Sig child would reach our handler?
Well, it depends on how we set up this. Let's find test Sig in it. Hold on.
Interesting. Does scaling P threads use signals too? I'm seeing something about that in the code.
Yes, but it doesn't use sig child. It uses like sig user one or something, I think. I can't remember. If it's there. Test sig and on signal expose on find out. Signal we create a signal handler takes that ISO. We create a
call sig action.
This is what gets called on it. I don't remember how the signal stuff works. So I feel
in epol.c, line 411, this is within ASIO event subscribe. The sig number gets passed in to the ASIO event creation, and here we're calling sig action to basically it's like a POSIX function, right? Sig action saying call this handler for this
specific signal. So yes, this shouldn't a sig child shouldn't trigger that from that test, but we should still be tearing that down.
Yeah, we should dispose it, but I'm just wondering if there's another hypothesis. I mean, could we be receiving sig int somehow?
Well, the only thing that we have in the backtrace is a sig child was received.
Oh, okay. It says sig child. Okay. I didn't see that part. Interesting.
Yeah, so it looks like when we set up a right.
The only code we have that creates a signal type ASIO event is signal handler. I was checking to see if like maybe process creates one or something.
It takes the sig to do, and it does it for a specific async. It does it for that specific one. So
and I don't see anything using sig child within the standard library. So no, nothing is setting up a handler for it.
So
unless there's is it possible that we have the wrong number in sig.pony? So packages/signals/sig.pony. Is it possible that we have the wrong number for like, because right here we've hard coded the constant values. Imagine that we had the wrong number for int. The number that we had for int was actually child. And in our test for the signal handler, we set up a sig child, or sorry, we intended to set up a sig int handler and raise the sig int signal, but we accidentally set up a sig child handler and raise the sig child signal. And at the end, we also receive a sig child in some, racy conditions. that would explain
it. What do we have for Sig Child for the number?
So we have for Sig Int, we have hard coded 2. For Sig Child, yep. We have hard coded either 20 or 17, depending on the platform.
Yep. On x86 and ARM, it should be 17 for Sig Child, and it is 2 across all of them for Sig Int.
What do you have a website, by the way, you're looking that up on for my reference?
I'm looking it in the man section 7 signal man okay. page from Linux.
Okay, so we seem to have the right number there. All right.
I'm going to change my comment that was on this one, right? And I'm putting it back to needs investigation. And I'm going to say, I changed my comment. We should try running the tests and sending a Sig Child while they are running and see what happens. is the Sig Child a red herring, right? Is that signal handler getting triggered related to that Sig Child?
Yeah.
That we see.
Okay. Seems like a reasonable next step.
We believe the signal handling being triggered is related to Sig Child driving, but we aren't certain. We need to run multiple times as when the signal arrives in relation to our signal unit tests might be important. Okay. Fun. Okay.
Okay. So we have issue ticket 4454. Actually, before I say that, we've gone over the halfway mark, and I wanted to ask, does anybody have any specific topics they want to make sure we cover while we're here together? All right, then on to issue ticket 4454, macOS Sonoma compile error. Latest comment. So this is when Pony is invoking LD, we get a missing dash platform version option error when invoking LD. The latest comment says they're confirming on Ventura 2 that they think it might be related to an Xcode version.
Yep, that seems to be, this is Xcode version related, yeah.
Okay. And I see you just posted a comment about somebody's finding that maybe dash LD classic is an argument that we can use to get back the old behavior. That would be helpful if true. So yeah, looks like we have a next step on that ticket as well.
Yep, I just updated the comment slightly.
4452 is the next issue ticket. Label dependent default types. This didn't get closed since the last time we discussed.
Well, it was reopened. You opened it 2 weeks ago, and it still has the label on it from the discuss during sync.
Yeah, from
a couple weeks ago. I don't know if we went over it. I guess this is a needs investigation right now and help wanted, and that's probably where it's at, right? Looking at it.
Yeah.
Without it, without investigation, there's really nothing else to say right now.
Yeah, I don't, and I'm not going to be able to investigate meaningfully in the next 17 minutes. So,
yep.
Let's take a look at 4451 trait default method seg fault. So Sean did a bit of triaging 2 weeks ago, narrowed down to a smaller, or I guess, no, you didn't narrow down to, anyway, so
I included the code that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this already has labels for help wanted and needs investigation.
Yep. I think. Yeah, I think we can just take discuss during sync. I did some initial triaging to help people look into it further.
Okay, let's look at 4273. Can't use an undefined variable in an expression error message oddity around always true conditionals that defined the variable.
I didn't think it was obvious what the resolution that we had right now was, so I added a note when I was labeling and looking at this last week, right?
Yeah.
This is a better error message thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm removing the discuss during sync.
We need to remove the bug too, right? Or do we consider it a bug for
better error message? We consider bad error messages, misleading error messages to be a bug.
Okay. I don't think it's that misleading of a message, but okay.
Okay, we'll pull bug off of it as well. All right.
All right. Finalizers. 4257, finalizers aren't run for actors in a cycle when pony no block is used. Sean says, last week, I don't think there's a straightforward way to go about doing this without a cycle detector. We do not know there's a cycle. We have no way to know there's a cycle. We are exiting the program because there are no actors to run and no actors to steal. And the schedulers. For performance reasons, there's no global thing that knows about actors. For cycles, that would be the cycle detector. I think the correct response to this bug is to document in the tutorial and perhaps elsewhere that pony no block means that finalizers will not be run for any actors that are in a cycle. Yeah, so you say there's no global thing that knows about actors. We only know about actors that have references.
Quiescence is literally all schedulers have nothing to do,
right?
And so all schedulers have nothing to do, and when all schedulers have nothing to do without there being a cycle detector, literally nothing knows about those actors existing except for themselves who are in the cycle, except
for each other, right? So we have no reference to even find out what cycle, like. Yeah, we have no way to get into the cycles that know about each other, so we have no like entry point in to know about them. Yeah,
and we're just shutting down the program, and the finalizers don't run.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna call this good first issue in documentation, help wanted, and it's not a bug, right? It is an interesting side effect.
Surprising limitation.
this would be if you're willing to pay a bit of the cost for it, right? This would be something which could be handled by the distributed cycle detector that we were talking about, right? Where the actors would know that they're in a cycle. Well, maybe actually, no, it wouldn't. Shit. Okay, I'm gonna pretend I didn't say all those things because it doesn't matter for this conversation right now.
Yeah. Yeah, if you turn off the cycle detector, we can't detect the cycles, and we can't finalize them, unfortunately.
Well, if we knew,
only other thing we could do, which would be like awful for so we this is a bit awful for it, like, but like it, let me just check in to see if it's at least like possible, right? Without changing, like, you know, doing any more bookkeeping, which is what we want to avoid. We do have like the pages of memory that have been allocated in the pool, and we could, in theory, I don't know if when we garbage collect something, for actors. Yeah, like look through the open, look through pages for actors that have finalizers, or really anything that has a finalizer.
But we don't know whether the finalizer has been run or not.
Yeah, so we don't like zero out memory when we release something back to the pool, probably, right?
No, we just, I don't believe we do. We just note that it's no longer in use.
Is there any kind of bit anywhere that knows whether it's in use besides the actor heap information?
I do not know. Dippin might know, but I'm guessing he probably doesn't, but he has spent time in there, so he might know.
Can you repeat the question?
So we're trying to figure out if there is any, with today's bookkeeping, like assuming that we're not doing any additional bookkeeping inside, like, or adding additional overhead for bookkeeping than what we have today. At the end of a program, when we're about to close out, is it possible to like look over the pool, the pools of allocated, like pages, and check and see if there are any objects that have not been destroyed and have finalizers? I'm assuming that we're checking to see, is there bookkeeping that we already do to note that like if we're looking at a given memory address in the pool allocator, to know that address is free or not free?
So the pool behind the scenes for the heap relies on the for an actor heap relies on the page map.
Mm-hmm.
In the page map, we keep actor information now. Previously, it only used to keep the chunk. Now it keeps both the chunk and the actor. So at program shutdown time, in theory, we could scan the page map, and for every actor we encounter, for that actor, go through and do the shutdown process of empty the heap, you know, free all the memory, blah, 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 and then keep iterate through the entire page map that way. I don't know if that would get all actors, because I think an actor that exists that has no heap allocations would not be represented in that page map list in any way. But it should get the majority of actors, which would in some way have some sort of a heap allocation.
Yeah.
I think unless it's going to get all of them, I don't think that's an improvement.
Yeah. So if we did want to get them all, we would need to make sure an actor that has not yet allocated anything on the heap, at the very least, an actor that all actors that have finalizers would need to be represented in the page map. That would be the criteria for if we were going to use that mechanism.
Sure. Yeah. The page map right now, I don't believe represents actors directly in any way. It only represents actors' usage of heap chunks. So, the information I'm talking about is indirect, basically, right?
Yeah, I know that an actor has some state of its own, right, that exists on the heap somewhere, and that's not represented here, like the actor's self object.
I'm sorry, what state that's represented on the heap? What are you referring to?
Well, like if an actor has a field, right? The actor is an allocated object that exists. Okay. Is that in the page map?
As far as I know, that is not in the page map because that is not considered an actor heap allocation. It is part of the actual actor struct, which is why the actor struct size depends on how many fields there are, because it points to, they get appended at the end of the actor struct after the padding. And the size changes, so that's not considered part of the heap, and so as far as I remember, not in the represented in the page map.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like we would not be able to. Well, four actors that are in a cycle, they would have references to each other. But those references may not be within heap allocations. They might be within those kind of special case actor allocations.
Okay. And that's fine, because we're only using the page map to get the actor reference. Once we have the actor reference for every actor from the page map, we can go through and look at anything else on the actor, including other actor references, and queue them up to also get terminated and finalized. But once again, I don't think even that guarantees that we would get every actor in every scenario, because I don't know that guarantees everything. Maybe it does, but I haven't thought it through enough to know that it does.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it would be able to find any actor which was part of a cycle that contained at least one heap allocation.
Yes. Assuming we wrote the code correctly.
Yeah. Interesting.
And by we, I mean someone, not me, because I can't write the code correctly anymore.
Okay. I think it's worth adding a comment about that, Sean. Unless you already have, I will add a comment about that.
Sorry, I had to step away for one moment. What was that?
I think we should just at least add a comment about the page map mechanism.
Okay. Yep. Go ahead.
So just to confirm, is this shutdown thing only in reference to cycle actors, or with no block, or is it also in reference to non-cycle actors?
It would. The. I don't believe there's a way for this to happen without a cycle with the no block. Yeah, because with no block, if an actor has no references to it and its mailbox is empty, it will run its own finalizer as part of its destruction, right? So there have to be other actors which have a reference to it, and those have to be ones which would, where the references would have to end up being a cycle for this to happen. Yes, this would only happen for actors in a cycle.
Okay, so if it's actors in a cycle, the only thing scanning the page map wouldn't capture is a cycle of actors where the references to other actors is a field that on the actor itself, and not like in other data structures that get allocated dynamically that end up on the heap in the entire cycle for every actor in the cycle. Those wouldn't get captured by what we talked about with scanning the page map. But
If it's in a field, it would or it wouldn't.
It wouldn't, because the reference from the field doesn't those actors wouldn't be represented in the page map in any way, since we're using the page map to discover mechanism.
Which is the example in this right? Is literally it's a field of foo or none, and we call a method to set foo to another foo, and there's a cycle.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like I said, I don't have the example in front of me right now, but yes, that sounds about right. Yes, when it's a field, then there's no page map reference, so we can't use that as a discovery mechanism for the actor that still might need to be finalized.
Yeah. Yeah, so we can't get 100% coverage with the bookkeeping we have today.
Yeah, we can't cover the case that's the example that I have right there, for example.
This. Yes, that would not. Well.
They're all fields.
Yeah, I was just looking at in the final function there is an allocation, but nowhere else there's an allocation, right? It's not necessarily a problem that the actor references a field. The problem is that the actor references a field and there's no heap allocations in the actor. If there was at least one heap allocation in the actor, we could detect it. This
Right.
one doesn't
In
have any heap allocations.
any actor in the cycle. That's the key. If any one actor in the cycle has a heap allocation, we should be able to discover that via the page map scanning thing.
You want to add a note to that effect, Joe?
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm typing it up. If we
And
wanted to catch 100% of cases, we might have to do something like, anyway. Yeah. I got no way back about it, so.
if we're not catching 100% of cases, I don't think it's worth doing, because I think that that's even worse of we may not get all of them, as compared to just saying a simple one of if you have a cycle and you're running with Pony No Block, finalizers will not be run on any actor in your cycle. That's an easy to understand one, which I
Right.
think is easier than if your actor did an allocation which may be entirely runtime dependent, right? But I mean, we could argue about that later.
I agree with you that a simple rule that somebody can understand from the documentation is better, and this one is definitely action at a distance, to where like any adding or removing an allocation in some deeply nested functions in some actor somewhere in the cycle would cause a totally different behavior, which is bad.
Yep. And with that, we are at time, but we'll have more things for next time.
Thanks everyone for attending, and for those who listen along to the recording, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.